From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the latest on incredible space issues with astronomer David Darling. Here's what's happening. Well, looks like the good guys might have lost one here. A key measure of President Obama's trade agenda has won final approval in the U.S. Senate, capping a dramatic few weeks that saw the legislation nearly collapse amid Democratic infighting. Well, the Senate has voted 60-38 for a bill that gives the president the so-called fast-track authority to negotiate all kinds of trade deals now. The bill, already approved by the House, now goes to his desk, and he will sign it. Unions and most congressional Democrats say free trade deals cost U.S. jobs and reward countries that pollute and mistreat workers. But the president and most Republican leaders say U.S. products must reach broader markets. Let's check in with Robert Morningstar, who's been following the story of TPP and TPA. Robert, did we lose this one or not?
I think we lost this one today, and it seems to be proceeding on a zigzag course toward pushing the TPP. But the most significant thing to emerge is this: the emergence of several treaties are in the works, and the TPP is only the tip of the iceberg. There's the Transatlantic Investment Partnership, and what is most interesting is that the TAA, which is separated from the Trade Promotion Authority, in order to pass it separately, was tied in with the renewal of NAFTA for Africa, as it's been described. The treaty is called AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act.
And what does this all mean, though, for us, Robert? I mean, we lose one. What's going to happen?
Well, one by one, it's like dominoes. I consider there's a domino theory that one by one. American industry further, and more losses to the.
Well, we keep losing you there, Robert. So, we're going to lose jobs, and we just lost you. But this is a bizarre trade agreement. They did not allow really us to read it to find out what it was. It was secretive. It is as strange a bill as anything I've ever seen. The U.S. military has conducted experiments with mustard gas that singled out soldiers of specific races in an attempt to discover which ethnicity might have greater protection from chemical weapons attacks, according to an investigation. Juan Lopez Negron, who's Puerto Rican, says that he was involved in experiments during World War II as part of what was known as the San Jose Project, named after the island in the Gulf of Panama where they were conducted. Lopez, now 95, remembered that the tests involved soldiers being sent out into the jungle-covered island and sprayed with mustard gas in a combat-like setting that was meant to simulate the South Pacific, just to see how the gas would react to soldiers of specific races. Crazy. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, trying to determine how prevalent the plague is in a rural area of northern Colorado, where a 16-year-old boy died of this disease. Taylor Gaze of Livermore died a few days ago, but the cause was only made public late Friday when health officials, at the urging of the boy's parents, put out a warning to make sure others who may have visited his family's rural home northwest of Fort Collins had not been sickened by fleas that could have infected him. Those visitors are now considered safe because the incubation period for that disease passed on Monday. A new mushroom used for centuries in Chinese medicine reduces weight gain in animals, say the researchers in Taiwan. The study, published in Nature Communications, suggested that the mushroom slowed weight gain by altering bacteria in the gut. The Boston bomber, Tsarnaev, has now apologized to his victims in a court hearing where he was formally sentenced to death. This is what he said. "I'm sorry for the lives I have taken, for the suffering that I have caused you, for the damage I have done, irreparable damage." Earlier, he remained impassive as the victims lined up in court to condemn his cowardly actions. Tsarnaev and his brother killed four, injured 264 in the bombings. They planted bombs at the finish line of the Boston Marathon in April of 2013. His older brother was killed in a shootout with police. Parents and children settled into their seats for a new animated Disney film. They got a quick jolt when a horror movie came on southwest of Ohio in the screen instead. The kids screamed. A projectionist accidentally played Insidious Chapter 3 instead of Inside Out. Nobody thought it was funny. In this area of a very strange town of Scotland, at least 50 dogs have jumped to their deaths from a 50-foot suicide bridge, and nobody knows why. Animal psychologists are baffled by the bizarre phenomenon that has now seen up to 600 dogs jump off the bridge to their death for no apparent reason. That's strange. Major attacks on the U.S. power grid system are increasing, with hackers stepping up efforts to penetrate critical systems and to implant malicious software that could compromise the power grid and result in a nationwide crisis. So not only do we have to worry about an X flare and an EMP, we have to worry about hackers doing what they're doing. Climate experts are warning that the amount of light and warmth released by the sun is nosediving in levels not seen for centuries. They fear a repeat of the so-called Maunder minimum, which triggered Arctic winter whiteouts and led to the River Thames freezing 300 years ago. Let's check in with the author, Robert Felix, of Not by Fire, But by Ice. Robert, here we are. You're vindicated. We're in an ice age.
That's what I've been saying, isn't it, George? Yeah, it's this came out today in all sorts of British newspapers. I don't know if it's anybody in the United States has talked about it, but scientists, many scientists now from Cambridge, from Oxford, from leading universities, from the Met Office in Great Britain, the University of Colorado in Boulder, they're saying we have a 1 in 5 chance of going into a little ice age because of this Maunder minimum, the lack of sunspots. But you know, George, there's something here that really bothers me.
What's that, Robert?
Is that although they say that, they keep on talking about global warming, mm-hmm. and they say this is going to be regional, and it won't save the world from global warming. Now, when they're talking about regional, they're talking about Northern Europe and the Eastern United States. I mean, that's a big area. But the thing is that when they start talking about regional, well, shoot, ice ages were regional too. You know, during the last ice age, I mean, you know, not all of Canada, but a lot of Canada was covered by 1 to 2 miles of ice. All of New England was covered by 1 to 2 miles of ice. But the rest of the world wasn't that much different than it is right now. And yet we had a full ice age. So they can call it regional, but I'm thinking, you know, if the world's wheat fields are covered with ice, that may be regional, but it's still going to be very catastrophic.
Well, I got to tell you, Robert, you said this back in 1996, and it's happening now, and I've got to compliment you and commend you for that. When you took heat, literally, from a lot of people, NOAA forecasters are estimating an 80% chance of polar geomagnetic storms. Here we are when another CME, that's a coronal mass ejection, is expected to hit Earth's magnetic field. The intensity of the storm, hard to predict. It could range from mild to severe. Oh, boy. But let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Stephen, we've been shouting this from the rooftops for a long time.
Well, George, as your last guest was talking about, maybe the sun indeed is going into this slowing period. There hasn't been that big spark as we would want if we're talking about big solar activity. But right on the sun right now, George, and for all the listening audience, active region 2371 has been acting up and causing us to see these particular coronal mass ejections. What this means is people here in the United States, in the contiguous United States, are actually getting to see the northern lights, the auroras, And they've been seeing, George, right here in my home state in Arizona, in Texas, in Georgia. So the possibility is over the next 24 to 48 hours, even with the moon in the sky, if you keep your eyes peeled to the northern sky with a clear sky, you have a fairly good chance of maybe getting to see something. We've seen them here in Arizona. Friends of mine in Payson have been observing them, and they're going to be, hopefully, putting on at least a decent show. But in conclusion, and very quickly, George, the conjunction that we talk about is tightening up. Right now, Venus and Jupiter, the most beautiful set of objects in the sky right now, in my opinion, in the northwest, just after sunset. Get ready. They're only 4 degrees apart now, but by Monday, a third of a moon diameter, an exceptional conjunction, George, as we go into the month of July.
Super. Thanks, Stephen. Okay, what you're going to hear very soon with David Sloan is a story about Robert the Haunted Doll. Now, this is a doll that apparently has been possessed by spirits. It has a terrifying reputation. We've got a poll up there at coasttocoastam.com, one of our Insta polls. You can go up there and vote and decide what you think about Robert the Haunted Doll. But I've got to warn you tonight for the first couple hours, if you are prone to really getting scared, you might not want to listen. You might want to turn your radio down. You might want to go away for a little bit, because what you're going to hear could chill you. Up next, David Sloan and Robert the Doll. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. David Sloan with us. David is an author, ghost hunter, haunted historian. He has firsthand experience with Santeria and voodoo practices. And let me tell you something. He has written a book called Robert the Doll. This is about the strangest case I've heard of in a long time. This doll is alleged to be possessed by spirits. It's got a terrifying reputation. Robert was the inspiration for Chucky the Doll in that 1988 horror film Child's Play. Let me bring our guest David Sloan in. We'll start talking about Robert the Haunted Doll. As you know, Joshua P. Warren has talked about him in the past. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much, George.
This doll is creepy. I've got to tell you, this thing is unbelievable. And he's still on display down in Florida, isn't he?
Yeah, he sure is. He's on display at the Fort East Martello Museum. As a matter of fact, I am standing about a foot away from him right now.
You are next to him?
I'm next to him this evening. We figured when we're going to talk to you, we wanted to do it right here where Robert is, so he can kind of weigh in on things. And the museum's closed right now, so I mean it's really good. I've been up here alone for about an hour. I brought some of my ghost hunting equipment, and there's already been some pretty cool things happening. So
I got to tell you, David, if the phone goes dead or something happens to you, we're going to call for help.
Well, yeah, I think your technical problems with the other Robert might have been caused by this Robert. He thought you were talking to him.
He's playing games with us already. When you're there, when you look at him, what do his eyes look like? I mean, do they look like they're staring back at you?
Well, you know, there's a couple of different Roberts that I know. Sometimes you look at him and he looks just like a doll. I mean, Robert originated back in 1904, and he stands 40 inches tall, so he looks like a small child. But he has the different signs of age. When you look at him sometimes, the eyes that he has are called shoe button eyes. They're just a flat black. And sometimes he looks like a doll, but sometimes you'll look at him and you'll see those eyes come to life, and you swear that you're not just looking at an inanimate object, that there is somebody there looking back at you.
And some of the stories about Robert, that when he was first created, people would see him on the upstairs floor of this house walking by the windows. It's very strange. Give us a little history, if you could, David, about
Robert.
Well,
the doll originated in 1904. And as I mentioned, he's about 40 inches tall. He's covered with felt, and he's stuffed with something that's called Excelsior. It's like a wood wool or almost like a straw. And Robert's dressed in a sailor suit. He arrived in Key West right around 1904, and he was given as a gift to a young boy in Key West named Gene Otto. And Gene just developed this bizarre attraction to the doll. Gene's real name was Robert Eugene Otto. Once he met the doll, he gave the name Robert to the doll, went by Gene for the rest of his life. And by all accounts, they were pretty much inseparable. There's stories that the parents used to hear Gene playing in the other room with Robert, and that they'd hear two different voices. And when they'd come in, it was just Gene and the doll. And then growing up, whenever Gene got in trouble, and you know, there's things that kids get in trouble for, just basic things, nothing terrible. But whenever things happened and his parents asked him about it, his response was, "I didn't do it. Robert did it."
He may have been telling the truth.
He probably was. I mean, you know, I've got some different theories, but this is behavior that continued to adulthood. And, you know, now that the doll's up here at the museum, Gene Otto's not the only one saying Robert did it. There's visitors up here every day blaming things on the doll.
Did Robert the doll get along with Eugene the little boy? I mean, did they seem friendly to each other?
They did seem to get along very well together, by all the accounts that I've heard. Now, with anything where there's a doll involved that takes on human characteristics, there's going to be some legends that arise, and there's going to be some stories going around. But it appears that everything was good between him and Gene.
So the kid, the little kid, never appeared to be possessed or anything like that?
The kid never appeared to be possessed. You know, it was more like they were best friends. And very close. And in fact, you know, close enough that he kept him through life. And there were some times when he went away, but up until when he died. And they say that in the weeks leading up to his death, Robert's the one that he spent the most time with.
Then the family sold the house, but they kept Robert in the attic, right?
Yeah. And you know, and there's so much that happened in between there, but Robert did remain in the house. And this is when a lot of stories really started coming out. You know, you got to consider, the doll arrives in Key West in 1904, and Key West was a much different place at the time. Gene and the doll were together until Gene went off, to, you know, to go to college and to become an artist. And then Gene comes back. Gene dies. He died in Miami, but he became ill at his childhood home. And then other people started coming in, and there were stories. You know, I've talked to locals who said, "Yeah, that's the haunted house. I was afraid to look up at the window because I've heard the doll moved."
Ugh, or they see him. And didn't a little girl then take possession of the doll?
Well, that's one of the legends, and tonight I'll clear up some of those legends with you.
Okay.
But the thing to keep in mind, even though we dispel some of the legends, Key West is one of those places where the facts are really stranger than fiction. And some of the things that we'll uncover are pretty crazy.
Well, you've written books called Ghosts of Key West, Haunted Key West. So it seems to me it is one of the most haunted cities in the United States, is it not? Or is that
it? Really is. It's the second oldest city in Florida, right behind St. Augustine. But when it comes to hauntings, Key West is ranked right up there with New Orleans and Charleston and places like that. And there are different theories as to why. One great theory, the name Key West actually comes from the first people who lived here. We had Native Americans. And some people say that the Native Americans knew that this was sacred ground, so they chose to bury everybody here. The more likely theory is that there were two warring tribes, the Seminoles and the Colusa. And the Colusa were pretty peaceful. The Seminole more aggressive, and they chased the Colusa from Miami down through the Keys, and when they got to Key West, the nearest place to go was 90 miles away, over to Cuba. So they made their last stand, and there was a massacre. You had years go by, and then the Spaniards arrived. And when they arrived, they found the beaches littered with human remains. And by the accounts, they say there were bones on the beaches, bones up in trees, bones arranged in intricate patterns. So speaking Spanish as they did, they named the island Cayo Hueso. And Cayo would mean island, Hueso meant bone. So Key West was Bone Island. And then when you had the modern settlers come along, they looked at the Spanish maps and misinterpreted things, and they called Cayo Key and Hueso West. So Key West has nothing to do with the westerly direction. You're actually saying the island of bones.
Well, with David Sloan, who is right now standing right next to Robert the doll, is Robert sealed in some kind of glass enclosure? Where is he?
Yeah, Robert has a glass case around him with an alarm, so he's pretty well protected. He has his own little section, and you have to understand, the Fort East Martello Museum, it's an old Civil War fort. So Robert's not the only strange thing here. There's been talk about Civil War soldiers who haunt the grounds, and there were never any active battles here, but there was a yellow fever epidemic. And
all right, hold on for a second, David. We're at the break. I'm wondering, though, if that alarm is when Robert breaks out or if somebody breaks in. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back to Coast, David Sloan with us as we talk about Robert the Doll. David, you were talking about some of the comings and goings out there at Key West. It really is a haunted area. What got it that way?
Well, as I mentioned, the Native Americans, I think, started it. And then there's a couple of other theories. One of them has to do with water being an anchor for spirits. And, of course, we're surrounded by water. A lot of the island is actually built over an old tidal pool as well. But another interesting theory, a lot of people nowadays are talking about limestone and how limestone seems to anchor different spirits. You'll have ghost hunters doing investigations up at farmhouses, and they say, ah, it's got a limestone foundation. And there's no scientific reason that would make sense, but it's becoming a trend where it happens again and again. And the Florida Keys used to be a giant coral reef. And, you know, with all the water rising and then going back down, it exposed those coral reefs. And we are built on coralline limestone. So all of Key West, all of the Florida Keys are limestone. I think that, in conjunction with the water, might help anchor all of these spirits. And it's also a pretty amazing place to live. I think a lot of people, they always had to fight to stay here. It's never been an easy place to live, but it was always worth fighting for. I think a lot of people die. And, you know, wherever they end up, they probably say, hey, I kind of like it back there. You might go back and stick around.
We want to stay. When you first saw Robert the Doll, what did you think?
My first encounter was fairly bizarre. I moved to Key West in 1996. And I used to manage cruise ships. I moved down here to start a ghost tour after seeing one in Scotland.
Yeah.
And I was doing my different research. And I went to the artist house not looking for Robert the Doll. And for those not familiar with the doll, the artist house is the home that Robert pretty much grew up in. It was Gene's family home. I went looking for the ghost of Ann Otto, who was Gene's wife. And when I knocked on the door, the owner of the guest house, his name was Daryl Meyer. I said, hey, I'm starting something called a ghost tour in town, and I'd like to talk to you about your ghost. And he smiled, and he looked at me, and he said, oh, you're here to talk about Robert. I said, no, I'm here to talk about Ann. Who's Robert? He goes, oh, Robert's a haunted doll. I immediately looked at Daryl and thought he was a nut. But I was intrigued, and he said to me, I can show you the room where he used to live. Would you like to see it? And as soon as he said that, the telephone flew off the hook on the desk. And this is
before
cell phones. So the cord extended straight out. It was coming right at us, and then it shot back to where it was on the desk. I figured that was a sign that we should go up to the room where Robert used to live. As we started walking towards the stairs, there was an old bookcase, and one of the doors opened up as if to stop me. And Daryl just looked at all this as though it was an everyday occurrence. We went up to the second floor. And there was a smaller staircase that led to the attic. When we got to the top, there was a small hatch, and Daryl let me go first. When I got to the top, I stepped into the room, and it was furnished with small child-sized furniture, small tables, small chairs, a little small double bench. It almost looked as if somebody was preparing for a tea party.
With Robert.
And the room was so hot. I mean, there was such a negative heat energy. I got this feeling that shot down my spine, and then I thought I was going to throw up if I didn't get out of there.
Jeez.
And I told Daryl, I said, hey, thank you for showing this to me. This is great. I've got to be running. So he told me about where Robert was. You know, he said he's up at the 40s Martello Museum. And I called the museum to make an appointment to see Robert. They didn't used to have him on display. Robert used to be locked up in a room in the back.
All by himself?
And all by himself. Well, there are a few other artifacts there, too. But he was the only artifact with feelings and emotions, I believe. And I talked to different people at the museum. Nobody wanted to bring him out. Different people I talked to on the phone said, oh, why don't you come back tomorrow when so-and-so is working? They kept on passing the buck. And I started to get the feeling nobody wanted to deal with the doll. Finally, I talked to the curator at the museum. Her name was Stacy Russo, and we made arrangements. I came up, and the fort is built out of old brick. There was one room set to the side, and she brought Robert out in a little chair. He's wearing his sailor suit. She set him down on the table, and as she's bringing him out, she was talking to him, and she said, "Hey, Robert, this is David. He's starting a ghost tour in town. He's here to take some photographs of you." And again, I thought, you know, what's up with these people talking to the doll like this?
Yeah, asking for permission.
Yeah, and, you know, she wasn't so much asking, but she was saying, this is what's going to happen, and talking to him as you would a young child. And then she set him down the table and left me to take the photographs. Now, this is before we had digital cameras. He looked like a regular doll. I didn't see anything that would make him haunted. I snapped a couple of photographs, and then I thought, let me get that hat off of his head and get some close-ups of his face. And I went to grab for his sailor hat, and I'll tell you, that doll changed. That negative heat energy that I felt upstairs at the artist house, it filled the entire room that I was in. The eyes, I mean, somebody was looking at me, and I got the feeling that he did not want me touching his hat. So instead of grabbing the hat, I picked up the camera, and I tried to capture this change in his facial expressions. And I snapped 1, 2, 3 photographs. None of them went off. I looked at the camera, trying to figure out what was happening. As it was pointing away from him, boom, 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 3 rapid-fire shots. I go back up to take another picture. It wouldn't take the picture of his face, and I swear to you, I could hear that doll laughing.
Jeez. Now, right now, where you are, do you feel that you're in danger, or do you feel strange or anything like that because he's right next to you?
You know, I did not really know what to expect coming up here tonight. I've been around Robert in different situations, and with most of them, they're very good. I mean, I've probably visited Robert 300, 400 times through the years. During the course of researching him, over the last 5 years, I got really serious about the research, and I started uncovering a lot of new information. During that time, I had some bad encounters, to the point where I wondered if I had a brain tumor, I wondered if I was insane, I was possessed. Because of those things, if this was happening 4 years ago, there's no way I would be up here with Robert. There was a time when I just avoided him. And I think it was because there was information that I uncovered that he simply didn't want out there.
Would you definitely get back to our producers tomorrow? We want to make sure you're okay, if you would.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea.
Just in case.
You know, there was one point. I lost 4 computer hard drives during the course of putting this book together. And each time that I lost the hard drive, the computer froze up when I was writing about a specific aspect of Robert. And of course, after the first drive is lost and all that work's gone, I started backing everything up. By the third time, I had things backed up on the cloud. I had them backed up with a paid subscription service. And again, at that same part, the computer froze up. The Apple techs were able to get everything back on my computer except the Robert manuscript.
Well, let me ask you, David, at what point did Eugene's family leave the house? Because they did leave the doll in the house, but somehow later on in life, Eugene got back with the doll, did he not?
Well, what ended up happening, Gene went off to France.
As a little boy or as an adult?
Well, this was when he was a young adult. He left the house at 18. So you figure he was with Robert starting in 1904 and then up until about 1918 or 1919. After that, he returned. He was very close with his family, so he'd come back for holidays. He would have seen the doll then. But he spent a good number of years both in Paris and then in New York. And that's where he met his wife. That's where he met Ann Otto. And she was an amazing concert pianist, you know, so it was the artist, the pianist. They were in Paris during the really great time, and they were there until the whole stock market crash, which sent them back. And then a little bit of time in New York, but what happened is Jean's mother became ill. And this happened when Jean was in his early 40s. So he and Anne returned to Key West. And this was a tough thing for her. She used to play the Rainbow Room in New York. She was such a great pianist. But his art career wasn't thriving in New York, so he was selling furniture. So this was really a chance for him to launch his career. And they'd come back, and Anne was going to be the housewife or the artist's wife. They arrived in Key West, and she didn't know what to expect. But I think the last thing she was expecting was to get here and then for Jean to introduce her to a doll.
Mm.
And so, from all the accounts that we have, I mean, Jean built a special room in the attic for this doll, the room I was describing that I went up into with that little furniture. Jean did this as an adult.
Did he keep the doll until he died?
He kept the doll then until he died. Jean was 74 when he died. Upon his death, there was a big mess with the will. He actually wrote Anne out of his will and left everything to his sister. And this created quite a few problems for her. I talked to the gentleman who helped Anne negotiate to keep the house, at least for a little bit. And one of the questions I asked him, I said, okay, I need to know, was Robert there at the time? Did Anne talk about the doll? And he said, yeah, Robert was there. He was in an upstairs bedroom. He was in an old cedar chest. Huh. And I said, oh, you know, what about the doll there? And she apparently used some explicatives and said, I hate that damn doll. And she also said that it was the only friend that Jean ever had because he could never make his own friends.
That's interesting. Introvert.
And keep in mind, she was bitter at the time, but those are the types of things. I mean, Jean was an eccentric. We know he did a lot for the community, but knowing his character, it makes sense that he was extremely close to the doll. And I have a few ideas as to why.
Tell me.
But from there, well, I believe that Jean wasn't just playing with a doll. I think there was a spirit attached to the doll from her.
Oh, no, I think there still is.
Yeah. And as far as who it is, though, I think I've actually identified.
You have?
The parents. I think I've identified the parents of the spirit.
The parents of the spirit?
Yeah.
Who would they be?
Well, you're familiar with the theories about Robert being created by an angry servant.
Right. Kind of like a Santeria voodoo type person, right?
That's what's been said, but most of that is legend. A lot of it's not based on fact, but one of those things with any legend, it starts with fact, and then it kind of degrades as time goes on. Robert is actually from Germany. He was made by the Steiff Company. The Steiff Company, they're the people who invented the teddy bear.
Huh. Now, did they make many Roberts? I mean, are there many dolls like him out there?
He's extremely rare. And this is why nobody knew that he was a Steiff doll for, well, I mean, you know, with the general public for about 45 years.
Okay, so how did that doll somehow get possessed? Assuming he did, and many people think he did, how did he get possessed? Who's in that doll?
I started looking for the servant relationship with the Otto family. And the only mention of servants I could ever find came from Jean's grandfather. His name's Joseph Otto. And Joseph had a manservant named Thomas Abbott. And it wasn't a bad relationship. By all accounts, they got along famously. Joseph ended up going blind. He was a doctor. He was a great man around town. And Thomas took care of his every need. He used to drive his coach around town. You know, he'd go out walking with him and help guide him along. And he stayed with him until he died. When Joseph died, because Abbott had been so good to his family, Jean's father gave him a job at his pharmacy. Now, Jean's father was a doctor as well, and he had a pharmacy right across the street from the artist house. Abbott had a wife. Her name was Emmeline, and she was a laundress. There's speculation that she might have had an affair with Jean's father. The other possibility is that she became pregnant with her own husband. What we know, though, in going through census records, in 1900, she listed no children. In 1910, she listed no children living, one child deceased.
Ah, okay.
So that means between 1900 and 1910, she had a child. And if you think about it, you know, if she'd lost the child at birth, it probably wouldn't have been registered. So the child probably made it to a few years old.
Are you saying that that deceased child, that its spirit became Robert the Haunted Doll?
I believe that, you know, if she had her child was sick, say it came down with a disease, say it was injured, where would she go? Where would she take that child? She'd go to Dr. Otto, right? Her husband worked across the street from him. She would have been around the house. She might have even done laundry at that house. So she would have taken her child, rushed the child to the artist house to see Dr. Otto. And I think when that child did not survive, either it saw the doll and said, hey, look, that looks like me. That's something I can live in. Or perhaps the mother used some type of voodoo and said, I'm going to keep my child. I can't bear to lose him.
See, I don't think, David, the spirit of a child, be it 2 months old or 5 years old, would become demonic or haunted. Something else must have happened.
Oh, I believe there's other things at work here, too. I'm pretty confident that that's the child that became Robert. I think the child that Gene was playing with, what I think he was actually seeing the spirit. You know, a lot of times kids will see the ghost that the parents don't because they haven't been told yet that, you know, no, there's nothing there. What I believe happened is over time, as attention started being paid to Robert, I think some other spirits wanted to get in on the action.
And they possessed that doll.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Philip experiment?
Tell me about it.
It took place in Canada, I think in 1972. And you had a group of people who decided to try to create a spirit. And they gave him a full name. I think it was Philip Eilsford. And they wrote down a lot of details about him, about when he lived, what his behaviors were like. And then they did seances to try to contact him. And they were successful. And there's a few different ways to look at it. Did they really create the spirit from their own consciousness? Or were there other spirits filling this void? Were they coming in to take that energy? You know, everything we hear about the spirit world, they need energy. And they'll get it any way they can. I think through the years, with all of the people coming and paying attention to Robert, and more every day now, you know, he went from being locked up in a back room to now, I believe more people visit him every day than visit Ernest Hemingway's house in Key West.
Wow.
He's a huge attraction now. And a lot of these people come up and they feel the presence of the little boy and they love him and they feel, you know, they almost feel like he needs protection. But then other people do feel this malice. And I think there are other entities that are here to fill in and provide people what they're looking for. And I really do get the feeling, you know, I've always imagined that there's four spirits at work here. You have Robert, the young, innocent boy. And then you have Gene Otto's spirit. You know, Gene used to have art shows up mm-hmm. here at the museum. So I think by being up here, he feels like he's finally getting his show as well. And the acclaim that he deserves. And he's almost a protector for Robert.
But well, you're standing right next to Robert, and anything could happen.
Anything could. You know, and there have been other investigators up here. As you mentioned, Joshua's been up here. He did some interesting investigations. There was a local group who came up, and they were using the Kinect SLS technology that creates the stick figures. And something walked on screen behind Robert. And it was very tall. I've always pictured these two very tall, darker entities.
All right, stay with us. Hold on, David. We're going to come back more. We'll also take some phone calls with you next.